From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome everyone back to... Hang on. I did the thing again. Welcome everyone back to Ryan Abraham's Vacation Hour. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from my Vacation Hour, and actually the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network called uscfootball.com. Although I flirted with, I took an official visit to Los Cabos this week, but I'm coming back, not just to the peristyle, but I'm also coming back to David in the Podcast of Champions, because that's what we make together. When you combine us, we form the Podcast of Champions. Talking all things Big Ten football. We have like 12 bowl games. Holy crap.
Always call us the Wonder Twins, right? That's your thing?
I would do the thing where we that we.
Form. I think we're more like one of the big robots in Pacific Rim.
Oh,
but like, which one of us is the person inside the brain controlling the thing, and which one of us is the big robot? That's the real question.
Is it the two people had to like work together, right? Is
that I think at one point he has to do it by himself or something. You know,
maybe. But I think we
work together. Do a mind meld.
Yeah. So our minds are melded to talk all things Big Ten.
There we go.
Football.
He brought it together.
Yes. And we got to talk about all kinds of stuff. There was a Big Ten championship game that happened a couple of months ago that we haven't done a show since. Something with David. I don't know what it was. I randomly decided to go to Cabo.
Yeah, we were trying to organize when we would do a show on Sunday, as we typically do. Ryan sends me a text. I'm busy. I don't respond to it for 2 hours. Then I get another text. Never mind. I'm going to Cabo. Okay. Have fun.
Yeah, well, that shows you to respond. So if you were responded and said, we'll do a show Monday, then I couldn't have booked the Cabo trip.
Yeah, you would have foregone the trip to Cabo to record our stupid show.
It is a stupid show. And if you want to email our stupid show, you can do so. Big10cast, all spelled out, at gmail.com. Call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at B1GPodcast. And we're live on our YouTube channel. And if you're watching us live on our YouTube channel, I can show you like a picture or two from my Cabo vacation. There's me with a yellowfin tuna. There's me having mimosa at my hotel overlooking the shore of Cabo San Lucas. Just beautiful time. I would rather do that, David, than be here with you. I'm sorry. But that was the choice I made. I hope you look at that.
I was kind of kidding about Ryan Abraham Vacation Hour, but you're truly doing the old man thing of making us watch a slideshow from your vacation.
I just showed you a couple pictures just because I knew you would love it.
Sound
the Siren Podcast. Are you 1,000% committed or 10,000 or 100,000? Yeah. No, I would say I'm a soft commit to my current employment and this podcast. Because I would definitely like to go back and do some more fishing and just hang out.
Are you hashtag blessed? Are you hashtag so blessed? Are you hashtag blessed? Blessing on blessings?
Yes. Hashtag respect my decision, all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. You know,
no more interviews and those kind of things. But I'm back with David. And we're live on our YouTube channel, which is great. And if you want to review our podcast, because you have the Apple Podcasting app or Spotify, you can do so. Leave us a 5-star rating. And on Apple, we have this little thing we love to do where you write something funny and we read it on the podcast. And the best one, we will send you a Trader Joe's gift card. Do we have any new ones, David? I haven't looked.
We have two new reviews.
All right. Someone's getting a gift card. And I know I haven't sent out the last couple. We did get I got an email from Griffin. He showed me his picture going to Trader Joe's. He had his Boise State cap on and everything. That was cool. He asked if I voted for Ashton Jeanty for Heisman. I told him he was on my ballot, but I'm not allowed to talk about it. So I just talked about it, I guess.
You told the kid that you couldn't tell him? You're treating this like it's a real process that matters, Ryan.
It matters. No. We're not supposed to say anything. I mean, I just told you he was on my ballot, but so I might go to Heisman jail. But,
who'd you vote for?
Gentry's on my ballot. Jeanty.
Who's your number one?
I would say there's a guy that's favored who in a program we used to cover.
You're a frigging
who
clown.
Plays both ways.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. We have some new reviews.
Okay.
All right. This is from A Hit at Parties. 5 stars. I think this is hands down the best college football podcast there is. I say I think because I have actually never listened to it. I'm not a big podcast gal. I don't really watch football either. I just assume it's the best because my husband promises it's worth spending hours away from his wife and kids to listen to it, tweet about it, and write into it. So it must be something special. Don't get me wrong. I think football is fun. The start of the season is always exciting. But then by December, it's like, hey, remember us? Or remember when we used to talk about our day? Or why is our baby able to say touchdown before dad asks? LOLOL. Anyway, Shane, if you're reading this, will you be home for dinner?
I think we have a winner.
I think we have a winner. But we do have another one. This is from AP_2! Insanity. According to Albert Einstein, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. What has been insane this past season? One example would be Dave starting off with having a 6-6 USC. Another example is me believing that UCLA grew into a decent team halfway through the season thanks to Martin Jarman's brilliant strategy of, quote, continuity. My last example is the fact that I gave a third review with aspirations to win a Trader Joe's gift card, the epitome of insanity. Gentlemen, thank you for fueling our insanity with this podcast, and I cannot wait to hear your thoughts on this CFP. I think they're both winners, Ryan.
Yeah, let's do it. Both winners. It's like our last.
Shane's wife, please email us in. And we will give you a gift card.
Yeah. Plus she did all the voices.
Yeah. Honestly,
I got the picture of Griffin up here on the screen. If you want to see him outside of Trader Joe's. So whenever we swear and we apologize, it's apologizing to Griffin. So thanks again, Griffin. And I'm glad you left your gift card. Well-deserved. Appreciate it. And, go Broncos there. So cool stuff. Yeah, so we have to recap the Big Ten championship game. Dave and I both picked Oregon -3.5, and we both covered. So no change really in the overall standings. For the whole season, my picks are 6 against the spread for all the Big Ten games, 69-57-1. David is 65-61-1. So there's still 12 bowl games. He can catch up. You know, in the bowls and stuff, do that. But just to let everyone know, if you want to still get involved and do the picks, we're going to do all our picks when we preview the bowl games, and do so with MyBookie, who have been our partner for the last several years. We've enjoyed working with them immensely. But you can use the promo code POC over at MyBookie and get a 100% initial deposit match. So if you put in, say, $100, they will match that when you use promo code POC to $200. So you would have a little extra juice to play with if you want to bet all the Big Ten bowl games. You can bet all kinds of stuff over there, NFL games, NBA going on right now, the NBA Cup, all those things. If you want to do that, we, of course, talk about Big Ten football, college football. And you can bet the games, you can bet the over-unders, you can do halftime things, you can do live betting. They even have a live casino option. So David and I both love going to Vegas and doing the blackjack thing, but you can do all that because over at MyBookie, they'll help you out. Again, promo code POC. Bet whatever you want because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie. So thanks to them again.
Speaking of $200.
What? Hold on. We have to... this is like a record for our show.
Colt, the man, he says in his $221 super chat for us. A lot of West Texas Mikes equal to the amount of points scored by the dismal Bruins offense. Thank you for another great year. Happy holidays and keep it mediocre. Thank you so much, Colt.
That's unbelievable.
Unbelievably generous. He's a new father.
I was going to say,
he's sleep deprived. He hit a wrong decimal or something. I get it. You meant to give $2,210, but I understand. That's awesome, man. For this, among many other reasons, I wish UCLA had scored more points.
Yeah. That's how many points the Bruins scored all season?
Apparently, I haven't done the full count.
I love how we're like associating dollar values with points. Like we have the $17 gift card is because UCLA scored 17 points. Washington only gave up 31. We could have had bigger Trader Joe's gift cards if they would have gave up more to Indiana in that game. And then this, 221 points on the whole season. You know, no wonder they fired Eric Bieniemy, man. Like, geez, like they that's not a lot of points. But
Deshaun Foster taking care of all family business this week.
So I don't have children. No, you do, David. So once you have a kid, I assume discretionary income just goes up, right? So he has more money to play around.
It's very easy to just give, you know, huge chunks of money to like podcasts you listen to, the mailman, like all that kind of stuff. Colt, you're awesome. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you so much, Colt. That was really cool. Wow. Happy holidays. That's awesome. Yeah, the money pretty much goes to David anyway. So, you know, don't worry. Like, we'll figure it out.
It goes into a piggy bank.
Well, we got the chat. It's pretty active. And we got to talk about the game a little bit. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, both Dave and I took Oregon. We got it right. But the game we got to discuss is
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. Taking on
Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, this game took place several months ago. Oregon beat, I believe, this Oregon, like they're this was several weeks ago. They're a very good team, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
They are undefeated.
Yes. They beat Penn State 45-37 in the Big Ten title game in Indianapolis. I mean, you know, recapping a game that's 6 days old, it's always fun, especially with our memories. Main takeaway here, I thought Oregon controlled the game pretty much throughout. It seemed like whenever, and it's not like Penn State was bad. I thought offensively they were able to do a lot. I think it really comes down to two Drew Aller mistakes that, you know, helped to break serve. But Oregon, just every time Penn State would get something going, they had a response. You know, Dylan Gabriel, his connection with Tez Johnson in this game, didn't seem like Penn State ever really had an answer for him, for Tez Johnson. And Dylan Gabriel was, you know, hyper efficient, hyper accurate, and was just, their offense was just too good to stop. And they were doing some nifty stuff. One of the Kenyon Sadiq touchdowns. It was a really, really cool play, like a fake pitch that turned into a little short corner throw to Sadiq. And then on Penn State's side, here's the thing I'll say just as a takeaway on the positive side for Penn State. You have to be happy that Nicholas Singleton appears completely healthy now at the end of the season, heading into the playoff, which we'll talk about kind of the bowl setup and the playoff picture. Him being fully healthy does change the dynamicism, I think, of this Penn State offense. You know, Tyler Warren is great, but if teams can scheme just to stop Tyler Warren and you don't have another big-time playmaker, which for middle stretches of the season, I think with Singleton dinged up and Allen being more of a power back you didn't really have, with him having a little bit more of his explosive playmaking back, I think that helps. And I think it made this one at least competitive in a way that it didn't look like it would be early, where it was, I think it was 28-10 at one point in the first half. And, you know, I mean, Penn State had the ball with a chance at the end of this game to tie it up, and Aller threw his second pick. But that drive started with a Singleton 9-yard run. And so I think it would have been a little bit maybe feeling a little BS-y if Penn State had pulled this off at the end, but they were in it. And I think a big part of it was having Singleton back as a real playmaker. Now, obviously Drew Aller didn't play his best game. And no. I think, you know, if he plays more like he does midseason, this is a much more competitive game.
No, I agree with you on all of that. I mean, it's a little, some concerns on the Oregon side. You know, you gave up, you know, how many rushing, it was like 292 rushing yards. Two, you know, Aller and Singleton both go over 100 yards in this game. But you, I guess the feeling when you're watching it was like Oregon was sort of in control. the separation just didn't like get there. And Penn State had, you know, they had a little late comeback, and like you said, the interception late. But I think at the end of the day, when you add everything up, it looked pretty even, except Oregon did a better job of taking care of the ball. When they like screwed up a drive, it was more, okay, well, you got to go punt, as opposed to Penn State having the two interceptions. And, you know, those turnovers are going to hurt you against a team as strong as that. But I think there's a lot of positives. And I think, I mean, this is one of those things, like, is Penn State better off? And we'll get into that, like, with the because, like you said, you know, Singleton being healthy, they have an easier path in the playoffs. Like, I feel like this is – you showed you could hang with a team. There's not a lot of elite teams in the country this year, and Oregon, if there is one, would be it, or, you know, one of a couple. And Penn State was able to hang with them. And not a lot of moral victories, but I think it's sort of like a reset. Like, all right, if we face a team like this later on, we could hang. And if we just have a couple breaks that go our way, no reason you can't win this game. And in a fairly easy path. So I think you can take away some positives there if you're Penn State. For Oregon, I mean, obviously the positive being you're the only team left in the country that's undefeated. You won, you know, you go into the Big Ten. You were late to add to and, you know, had to take a half share to just get in there. And you go in and make a huge statement by winning the whole damn thing. And having Oregon at that elite level the entire time helped the rest of the Big Ten. Four teams easily in, where the SEC was kind of scrambling, and you had a bunch of teams that had losses. But Oregon was just sort of that, like, constant the entire season. They just kept winning and winning and winning. And so I think there's positives there too. But giving up that many yards on the ground, I think, is a little concerning. So, you know, we'll see kind of where you go from there. But I thought it sort of worked out for everybody that this is, as far as for the conference goes, it's probably the best result. As far as Penn State goes, like, hey, you're still in the playoff. You got a pretty good path. And for Oregon, there's, you know, it's not an easy path, but, like, there's, I mean, you made the statement that, like, look, we are here to play. We are here for, you know, this is a real team. No home playoff game, which kind of sucks, but still, this is like, I think this one kind of worked out for everyone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do want to note one thing from the game a little bit more before we get into, like, playoff and bowl stuff. Dan Lanning made the first, I think, horrible decision on fourth down that I think I've seen him make.
That was a weird
one. So fourth and five at the Penn State 45, minute 40 to go in the third quarter, Oregon up by 14. Homeboy punts. He punts on the Penn State 45 with only 5 yards to go, and his offense is averaging what? Like, I don't know, 8 yards a play, 10 yards a play, something like that. I mean, they're not having any trouble moving the ball against this Penn State defense. And then, of course, that leads to a Penn State touchdown, so hopefully he learned from the mistake. But also, there couldn't have been anyone in his analytics team telling him to punt right there. So, come on, dude. You know, don't lose your fastball here at the end. You know, This is the big boy time where you're supposed to, you know, really display your analytics prowess. So be an asset. Now, you're going against James Franklin, so you're going to be an asset compared to him no matter what. But do it for real once you get into this playoff jobby. Come on, man.
It's funny. It was kind of the opposite of what, like, Dan Campbell did for the Lions in their last game. What he went for it, like, sometimes you should have just kicked the field goal. And it was just like, just kick the field goal. That's a smart thing. And they went for it and they got it and whatever. But it was just one of those things where you were sort of being aggressive for the sake of being aggressive. That was a situation for Dan Lanning where, and I knew you would harp on this one, that was the time to be, like, just go for it. I don't even know if aggressive is the right word, because
Dan Campbell was 100% right too.
You thought he was right? I didn't think
100% right. Are you kidding me? He has a chance to end the game on offense. Why would you leave it up to the fates? Which is leaving it to your defense is leaving it up to the fates. Like, that is the purely most risky behavior. Your offense, though, you control your offense. Nobody controls defense. It's a chaos machine.
Yeah, I mean, what, any other thoughts on this game?
No, I mean, I think the final score is a little deceptive. I think the final stat totals are a little deceptive. I did think Oregon controlled this one.
It felt that way.
Yeah. But it, But I don't think either of these teams, I think they're both like absolute justifiable playoff teams. And as we'll get into in a second, it's ridiculous that the loser of this game has a much, much, much better path in the playoffs.
Yeah. The Tez Johnson deal, I mean, he was freaking amazeballs.
What, right? You mean him being uncoverable?
But it was so there, he was such a huge percentage of what, how many yards did he threw, you know, he threw 181 yards to him and 102 yards to everybody else. So like,
yeah,
that's a little concerning, especially when you play.
No, not to make a CFB 25 analogy, but it's like when you've got like a few plays that you just use against the CPU when you're playing in like some dynasty. And it's just like, oh, no, I just like this one play and the CPU never covers it correctly. So I'm just going to keep spamming it to that one guy. That's what Oregon was doing. And Penn State never properly covered Tez Johnson ever in this football game.
Yeah. They did. I think Penn State utilized Tyler Warren. He won the Mackey Award, by the way. So congrats to him.
Oopa.
Yeah. So I thought they utilized him better than they did. What was the other game that was it the Ohio State game where they weren't like going to him?
They
much?
Didn't give him the ball in four tries from the inside the Ohio State five.
So yeah. I thought utilized him well, and that, you know, I didn't feel any pianos were falling on James Franklin's heads, and I know there's people in the chat talking about he hasn't done well in the big games. I felt like he coached pretty well for this game. Like it was a big game, and he felt like. I think he gave them, you know, Penn State a chance to win. So I wasn't knocking like Franklin or anything for how he coached this game too.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. It's again, I think it's good for, it couldn't have gone much better for the Big Ten in this, the way this all sort of played out. I know Kirk Cignetti wanted a home.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
Home playoff game, but to go from 3-9 to in the playoffs, pretty freaking amazing. To get four teams in and there wasn't drama, and the way that drama forced the SEC to only have three in there, to have Ohio State be able to host a game, Penn State be able to host a game, you know, it's, I think it worked out, it couldn't have worked out much better. Like if you were like, how do you want this to go? To have like a leg up and an advantage, I guess you could say, in the college football playoffs against the SEC after, you know, Michigan won it last year. I think that's, you know, kind of where you want to be. Now, if all the teams like lose in the first round or Oregon loses in the, you know, second round when after their bye, that would be bad. But to go into the playoffs, like this is sort of like almost an ideal scenario for the Big Ten. I don't know what else you could have had, like Illinois won another game somewhere and snuck in somehow. But outside of that, having the SEC sort of like trying to figure crap out and not having the easiest paths in any of their draws, I think. I think it's worked out well for the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think it's just a very stupid structure. The fundamental issue, do you want to just get into it now, the playoff and everything?
Yeah, we could do that. So we're not going to like preview all the games and everything, right? Like
No. But the fundamental issue is that Oregon got the one seed, and by virtue of that, it plays against the 8-9 game. And the 8-9 game is Ohio State-Tennessee. Ohio State will probably be favored over Oregon in the rematch, which is stupid. That's dumb. That shouldn't have happened. If you have to manipulate the rankings after the fact to make it so the 8-9 game is not Ohio State-Tennessee and is in fact either of Indiana, Notre Dame, or SMU, Penn State, you do that to reward the number one team. This is stupid. This was bad bracket making. And it's going to probably lead to a format change, would be my guess. And they will just seed based off the rankings instead of seeding based off of conference champions. But this is, I mean, it sets up Oregon with an absolutely awful opener in the quarterfinals where they'll have to play against, you know, they'll potentially have to play against either Ohio State or Tennessee in the Rose Bowl. Tennessee, not as big a task, but still a pretty damn good team. And not like none of these teams are, you know, horrible, but there are a lot of teams you would rather see in that first game than potentially Ohio State or Tennessee. So I think that was just a real problem. But there are some cool stuff. I mean, we're going to be very excited to watch Indiana Notre Dame. That'll be the battle for Indiana. SMU Penn State, that sets up for Penn State to have a really good chance at playing Boise, and then a really good chance of getting to the semifinals because they'll be favored by quite a bit over Boise. You know, James Franklin will have his opportunities, and neither of those qualifies as a big P4, matchup, which is what he has struggled with. So he won't potentially have that until the semifinals. So that's all good. And Ohio State, like, look, they have all the potential in the world. It's, they've got more talent than anybody. Maybe Chip Kelly finds a new job in the meantime and you can go back to having a good offense too. I know the offense has been very good this year. It's just, it wasn't very good against Michigan. I'm just making a joke. Don't hurt me. But I think there's a lot of good here. I just think Oregon got absolutely hosed. And I know some Washington fans will be pleased with that, but, it's no bueno.
No, I agree with you there that you need some sort of reward for being the only undefeated team left. And they don't really have, the bye is one thing, but you already have to play in a conference championship game. You're going to play against Tennessee or Ohio State. They just had a bye the week earlier than you, So there's really not that big of a benefit. And no one would take Oregon's road over Penn State's road. You would much rather be Penn State. And even though you played in the conference championship game, the teams that they have to play, like you mentioned with James Franklin, like he's had a hard time with the blue blood brand names, not these kind of teams. Odds to win. I'm trying to see what the odds to win the national championship. I think that was, let's see, who's the favorite? So the odds to win, according to FanDuel, the latest ones I've seen, Texas is plus 360, Oregon plus 360, so they're, I guess, tied. Georgia plus 500, and Ohio State plus 500. So Ohio State loses that game. They're still the number, tied for number three is odds on to win the national championship, and Penn State is just behind them at 550. Part of the reason being that they have a much easier path to get into the semifinal. Now, the only other Big Ten team, Indiana's way down at 4,000 to 1, but plus 4,000, not 4,000 to 1. But Oregon's tied for the best odds right now, and then Ohio State is tied for third with Penn State coming in fifth. So that's, there's a pretty good chance that one of these teams makes a run and is in the finals or wins a national championship.
I have to address somebody in the chat, Strangerous, who says, "This is how seeded brackets work, David. It should be a 16-team bracket."
Is that how
it is? No, it isn't. This is not. Yeah, I'm just assuming. This is not how a seeded bracket works. This is how a stupidly seeded bracket works, because they have guaranteed buys to all of the conference winners. The top four conference winners all get buys. So you have Boise State and Arizona State with buys. If it was seeded appropriately, with the top four teams getting buys, which would be Oregon, Georgia, Texas, and Penn State, you would have an 8-9 matchup between Indiana and Boise State for the privilege of playing Oregon, rather than an 8-9 matchup between Ohio State and Tennessee, currently the 6th and 7th seeded teams in the CFP top 25, but they are 8th and 9th seeded in the bracket. So you would end up with a better road for Oregon if you just seeded it like a conference tournament in basketball, but they didn't do that. They seeded it stupidly. And so we're ending up with this issue that everyone who looked at the whole thing beforehand said, that's probably going to end up being an issue. And it ends up being that you would much rather be the number five team than the number one team, which sucks objectively.
Yeah. And it's funny. We thought 5-1 would be like, that's where you would compare, but it really was more, and I'll put David on the screen here, but looking at, where Penn State is and who's going to be, who do you want to play in the next round? Like, it was worse to be like the 7, because you're going to go against Georgia. If you're the five, and you're Pat, you know, it's, we thought
you would rather be, you would rather be five, six, and I mean, you'd rather be five and six than one in this bracket.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's what the
five, especially though, because five, you get the 12 and then you get the lowest rated of the four byes, which means you get Arizona State. Texas is going to be favored in each of its first two games. There is a very good chance number one Oregon is not favored over Ohio State in the quarterfinals.
Yeah. Texas, you know, but the other thing too is when you think about it, a lot of times you felt like a Boise State would be the 12. Texas does have to play Clemson, so that's a brand name. Now, they've lost three games this year.
Clemson's shitty. They're not good.
It's still like Clemson, like, but no, they got some dudes.
I disagree.
Like,
they're not good.
Okay. Well, I mean, they got some dudes that, like, a Boise State doesn't have.
They were, they were lucky to win that game. They're not.
They were lucky to win that game. And that was, like, a beautiful – that was – that another – as far as perfect scenarios go – like if you were Alabama, you were just rooting for SMU, right? Like SMU just beat Clemson and we're in. The committee already put us above Miami inexplicably, but they did. And you were in. So you're watching that game and like, so Alabama's rooting for SMU. Go Mustangs. And then what happens? Clemson starts blowing them out. And then they're like, okay. Well, if Clemson blows them out, then they'll be out. So keep going, Clemson. Keep blowing them out. So then you switched allegiances mid-game. And then SMU makes this crazy comeback and ties the game and loses on a 56-yard field goal. It was basically like the only thing that couldn't happen to Alabama just sort of got screwed. They could have – either result they could have won, but the way the result happened where Clemson won on a walk-off 56-yard field goal – was the one thing, like, you can't keep SMU out for that one. So if you're like rooting for the chaos and stuff, that was a glorious result where either way that game ended up, and it was the night game. It was like, so to me, anyone that's like bagging on the playoffs and this stuff doesn't matter, man, that mattered. Like that mattered to the stupid SMU Clemson game mattered to Alabama badly. And it mattered in all these different directions. So I thought it was awesome, but I don't know if you cared, but I did. I liked it.
I don't care. Yeah. I mean, whatever. It's going to be fine. It'll be fun. Sure. You would like a system that rewards being number one. And that's not what this is. There's going to be more chaos, I guess, or whatever, or there won't be. And Georgia and Ohio State will end up playing each other. We'll see. It certainly... the way this sets up, it sets up to benefit the teams that were a little disappointing this year. It sets up to benefit Ohio State. It sets up to benefit, Texas. And so that's okay. I mean, it just when people were talking about devaluing the regular season, that piece, Ohio State shouldn't be competing for anything right now.
And I mean, they're like the number three odds to win the national championship. How crazy is that?
I mean, because advanced stats wise, they're the best team in the country still, you know, and they have to play an extra game in the first game and it's against a good opponent. So that's why their odds are lower. But I guarantee you, once they get to the quarterfinals, they'll probably be number two or number one for, you know,
if they can get past Tennessee. Yeah. And they get to play them in Columbus. Like, I mean,
anyway, it's dopey. It's a dopey system, but we'll see how it ends up.
Yeah.
We're going to be results-oriented with this, so let's not make any prognostications.
The Siren podcast. Alabama didn't get screwed. No, I don't think they got screwed. They lost to Vandy in Oklahoma. Yeah, 100%. Like,
you did say Alabama got screwed. Those were words that
you remember. I didn't mean that they were that they were wronged in any way. Like, they had a chance to make it to the playoff, and the way the game played out screwed them over. They shouldn't have. I thought Miami should have been there over them. So I think they sort of screwed Miami out, but then they were there and then they just got to take it away from them. So
yeah,
I didn't mean
the end of the season, your fan base is talking about why they want your coach to be fired, you shouldn't be in the playoff. So that's Ohio State and that's Alabama.
How funny is that? I mean, yeah, What? I mean, so the hypothetical thing, like a couple years ago, when Ohio State lost to Michigan, they were a field goal away from winning the national championship. They almost beat Georgia. And then that would have been everyone's like, well, what do the fan base think? You won the national championship, but you lost to Michigan. If you don't think that's a good season, and I think some Ohio State fans would, like, you've put way too much emphasis on just one game. You're giving that opponent too much power by Xing out all the M's and all that. So I think that's so stupid. Like, it's your rival. You want to beat them, but holy crap, if your whole world is wrapped up with beating them, and you don't care about winning a national championship, there's something to be odd about that. So same thing could happen this year. Ohio State wins the national championship, but they've lost to Michigan four straight years, once as a 3-touchdown favorite. Like, what's the Ohio State fan base going to be like? Like, it's going to be freaking bad. You got to be excited. You spent all this money, bought a roster, win a natty. Who cares that you lost to Michigan and by Oregon at one point on the road? Like, but there's going to be fans that
care. Who cares about all these things that we've all grown up with college football caring about? Don't give a shit about them. I care about the ESPN-branded college football playoff. That's the only thing that matters. No, okay. People care about what they care about. People care about the fact that, like, that team that they grew up hating is kicking their butt every year.
Yeah.
And that's justifiable. It's as justifiable as anything. This is an irrational thing that we are doing. We watch sports for irrational reasons. It has nothing to do with, like, oh, I should care about this because it's important. No, none of this stuff is important. You pick how it's important. If it's important to you that your team beats Michigan and they lose four straight times and to the worst Michigan team in those four straight times against probably your most talented Ohio State team, that is a justifiable data point to say, hey, he's not the guy. And I think anybody who's saying, oh, okay, well, if they beat Tennessee, maybe get a rematch with Oregon and beat them, get all the way to the final and lose again, that's suddenly justifying what happened this year. I think that's ridiculous, because you can't put yourself in the shoes of an Ohio State fan who's grown up with this stuff. Like, if you're losing to Michigan, that feels bad every single year. And I think this is all, it's a feeling thing. It's not a, you know, we think about, like, the dynamics of it, but for the fan thing, it's a feeling thing. And if you feel Ryan Day is not the guy, I think you're eminently justified in that feeling, because frankly, I don't think Ryan Day is the guy. And I'd be kind of surprised if he wins the national title ever at Ohio State, which is kind of ridiculous.
No,
Did he win one already? No, he didn't, right?
No, he hasn't won one. No, but I totally makes sense. But I'm thinking Michigan last year loved beating Ohio State, but they loved winning the national championship way, 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 way more. So you can hate losing to Michigan, but you're going to, if you win the national championship, I think it trumps it all. Like, that sucked. We had a Michigan problem. We'll figure it out later. But scoreboard, we won the natty. Michigan would trade that win for a natty. And I think everyone else would. If you can't trade a national championship for one loss to your rival, yes, I know it's four in a row and it was a terrible loss. This is now the era where you get that second chance. You get an opportunity to sort of right or wrong in season, where before in college football, you never get that. It was really rare to get that. You get it this year. So we'll see if they're able to. I mean, they got it 2 years ago and just barely missed on it.
Ohio State should be in the playoff every year with the amount of money they spend.
Yes. I mean, if they're not in the playoff, that's something. But I don't think making the finals is like – that's going to make up for the season. Like, this is only about if they win a national championship, then you can probably say, all right, that sucked losing to Michigan, but we won the national championship. Winning a couple playoff games isn't going to, I don't think that, and you would think normally that would erase some of this, but I don't think it would.
Here's an interesting question.
Okay.
If there was not a 12-team playoff this year and Ohio State was out, would they have fired Ryan Day after Michigan?
Maybe.
Next year, if the exact same season plays out and they don't win a natty this year, next season, the exact same season plays out, they would go 10-2, playoff berth, lose to Michigan, right? Probably they fire Ryan Day?
I bet you.
Before the playoff. Because this is the thing with a 12-team playoff. No, but with a 12-team playoff, this is the interesting thing, because there are disappointing seasons for lesser schools and there are disappointing seasons for greater schools, and they are very different things. Alabama's 9-3 season, which almost elicited a playoff berth, is a very disappointing season. It's the worst Alabama season in like 17 years. Is that a fireable offense in a world where that team might make the playoff and might make a run, because Alabama still is one of the most talented teams in the country? I think it's going to change the dynamics of a lot of things, and also will maybe lead to schools being a little bit more judicious about how they fire, but also it might lead to really strange scenarios where you have interims competing in the first round of the playoffs. It didn't happen this year, but you can see that scenario playing out, because Alabama was, as you said, a made field goal away from making the playoff this year. Again, that same scenario could play out next year and the year after that. How long is Alabama going to put up with three loss regular seasons? How long is Ohio State going to put up with losing to Michigan? And are they going to allow that coach, who they think is done and disappointing, to try for the dead cat bounce that you're talking about, which is making a miracle run in a playoff? I think there's a lot of interesting things that come from having a 12-team playoff versus a 14 playoff.
Yeah.
With 12 teams, you are allowing a lot of riffraff in there. 14,
that's true.
Not so much riffraff.
Alabama did beat, they had a couple big, they beat Georgia, they beat somebody else that was really big too.
Alabama is one of the like three most talented teams in the country. Right. They should win some big games. They should never lose
they
to
just,
Vandy.
They just blew a couple bad ones.
Ohio State should never have lost to that Michigan team.
That's
the
true.
The previous three, fine.
And Ohio State never had to win over to Penn State, thing. Which was good. Yeah. But they, Alabama had more like quality wins on that one. We have some other news we got to bring up. Roger says, congrats to Eddie Saplicki on winning the Ray Guy Award for best punter in the nation. And that is, congrats. He was really good. He just boomed the punt. He was former ASU punter, followed up by Sound of Siren podcast. Anyone else think a team with their reputed offensive wonder kid of a head coach winning the award for punting is hilarious?
It's great.
Yeah, that is true. The fact that the, I don't know if Lincoln Riley. Yeah. Back in the Pete Carroll day, they had one of the best punters in the Tom Malone, but he never got enough punts to qualify. That's what you want. You want a great punter that doesn't get enough punts to qualify for those awards.
That sounds like the title of a very sad song.
We got to talk about Barry Odom too. Purdue, they got, hold on. Let's pull it up here. We've got
Purdue Boilermakers.
They hired UNLV's Barry Odom, who he's a really good coach. Took a crap program, made it good. Can he take a crap program and make it good in Purdue, David Woods?
It's been done. Jeff Brohm did it, sort of. I would push back on a very good coach in Barry Odom. He's fine. He went 25-25 at Missouri just before he went to UNLV.
Yeah.
So we will see, but I think Purdue, you got to take a flyer on somebody. He's probably, a decent enough guy to take a flyer on.
Yeah. I like that.
But yeah, Jeff Brohm, did it. Ryan Walters demonstrably did not.
No.
So going back to, I guess, more offensive minded is decent, justifiable. Barry Odom has, hired Brennan Marion to run his go-go offense. I mean, I know he's more of a defensive guy by trade, but that means maybe, Leopard changing his spots a little bit. So we'll see. But I think it's a decent enough hire.
Some interesting hires out there with Dan Mullen going when he went to UNLV.
UNLV, right? Yeah.
Bill Belichick, if you've heard of him, I know you don't follow the NFL, but he went to North Carolina.
Yeah, that one's nuts. That one is insane. You fired 73-year-old Mac Brown to hire 72-year-old Bill Belichick?
Yeah, you got to get younger, dude. Like you got to go for the youth movement, and then.
And the thing with Belichick is, like, I know, great offensive mind or anything, but like he had lost his fastball by the final 3 years with the Patriots, very evidently.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would take the chance just because it's like it's freaking Bill Belichick. Now that the college game,
you're North Carolina though. Like honestly, North Carolina, and I know a little bit about the program, but like you've got a decent recruiting base. You've got some alumni who will pay, shell out some money. you can hire more of a pure proven thing. You don't have to keep hiring like septuagenarians to be your head coach. Like you can go and get like the, you know, a hot 50 something coach who can, you know, recruit and still has the energy to do it and isn't some NFL guy. Like this is,
but the sport is moving to NFL. The sport is becoming more like the NFL with general managers being important and all that. You know, it's less about sitting in a kid's living room.
It is becoming like the NFL in all of these very stupid ways, but in a very fundamental way, it is not the NFL because the guys who are playing for you are still 18 to 22 years old.
True.
And they can't spend as much time like with all your intricate playbooks, Bill, as your NFL guys. And so you end up with the situation where these NFL guys come in, they think they can out-scheme everyone because they've got all this intricate stuff in the NFL. And then they either realize or don't and get fired immediately, but they either realize that, oh, wait, the problem for these college guys isn't that they don't know how to draw the really great squiggly lines on the piece of paper. It's that there is no time to teach it.
Yeah.
No time. So you have to do more simple squiggly lines. And it takes some of these guys forever to learn that. Takes some of them short times.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie Rice never figured this out.
Yeah. Danton Lynn did it quick, right?
Yeah. But you got, well, defense is easier than offense. But like a lot of the times these NFL guys come in with offensive playbooks that are West Coast and super thick. And you got to have these, you know, intricate play calls and all this kind of stuff. Doesn't work. Yeah. Does not work. Proven to not work. So unless he is fully embracing hiring a college coordinator and being a college program, it's not going to work, obviously.
Yeah. I love to see it, though. Like, this is great. Like, Dion, amazing, whatever the results are. I think this is going to be amazing, whatever the results are. And then Rich Rod, who we covered a little bit when he was at Arizona, back at West Virginia. So
yeah, that's a good hire.
There was like a lawsuit in that when he left. One comment before we take a break, and we'll get into some questions. Roger says, you can't fire a head coach that makes the playoffs. No, you definitely can. Like that, I think the.
I'll say it'll happen. Like it's going to happen.
Like it's not, I think it was like Andy and Ari, like Andy Staples, they were talking about like rating the which, you know, playoff head coaches could get fired. And Ryan Day was obviously number one on the list, but
yeah,
it can happen. Like just because you make the playoff, if you're at Alabama, you're at Ohio State, like David said, the same thing happens next year and these teams lose games they shouldn't or lose to your rival in Ohio State's case. And you like, you know, make the playoff, but you're not in the, you don't win the conference again. And you're like the 10 seed or something, like that's not good enough for those places. So, and the fact that Alabama missed it this year, at least, you know, Ryan Day has a chance to make a run this year that you could build on next year. You know, Alabama's playing whatever bowl they're in. I forget what they're so he's got to do something good next year. They are not happy with Kalen DeBoer, which I don't think is fair, but it's a whole different.
They lost to Vandy. Everything's fair.
Okay.
We should go through the bowl games. Are we doing a break first?
Yeah, let's take a break and we'll come back and do the bowl games. Back in a minute, everyone. Alrighty, we're back here. Whew. On the Podcast of Champions. What do we got going on, David? Do we got bowl games?
There are bowl games.
How many we got? So we'll just kind of, we're just going to list them, right?
Yes, we're going to list them.
Okay.
So do you have it pulled up?
Yeah, I got it pulled up. So first up, we have, do you have, I'm going to do it by date.
Got it.
We're going to start with the playoffs. First round, we got
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
And they're taking on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Give me my pot of gold.
Yes.
This is on Friday, December 20th, next week.
How crazy
Notre Dame
is that?
Stadium, 8 p.m. Is it 8 p.m.?
It is 5 p.m. Pacific.
Why is this East Coast time? What the hell?
I don't know.
Hang on. I'm going into a better section of this stupid website. Hang on. Hang on. Just will you hold your horses? For God's sake. It is, just wait. Could you just wait? You're so impatient. 5 p.m. on ABC. 11-1. Number 10, Indiana, going on the road to take on number 7, Notre Dame, 11-1. Notre Dame's a 7.5-point favorite. We'll do the full preview next week, but pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the next day. We've got number 4.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
They're taking on the number 11 SMU Mustangs. That sound good?
No? Yeah.
That's at 9 a.m. next Saturday on TNT. Number 11 SMU, number 6 Penn State. Penn State's an early 8.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I love that a playoff game is on a network that hasn't showed a college football game all year. Isn't that good?
It's great. I love it.
They haven't, right? They haven't?
I don't think so.
I don't know how that shit works.
You like to say definitive things.
I do. Okay. Yep. Also that day, we have number 6.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
Ohio State, they're taking on the Tennessee Volunteers. Well, I guess I'll go on down to New Orleans and fight for Andy Jackson. I'm going to volunteer to do that. 5 p.m. on ABC. Number 9, Tennessee. Number 8, Ohio State. This is in Columbus. Ohio State's only a 7-point favorite. I would be banging that pretty hard.
West Texas Mike gave us $5 just for your voice, your Irish voice.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thanks for that one. Appreciate that.
Somebody brings up the point. Columbus, South Bend, and State College in December. Going to be fun times.
It is. And looking at it, like advantage for the Big Ten, I mean, Indiana's in state. Like, it's not like Notre Dame has an advantage.
Is it an advantage for anyone? Like, playing in cold, shitty weather is not fun for anybody.
Yeah, but if you're from there, like, you're at least used to it. So SMU, yes, Dallas to, you know, that's going to be a little rougher. Tennessee, same thing, got to play in Columbus. I think it's supposed to be like 40 degrees. We'll have to see what the updated weather is. But, yeah, I think advantage there for not a disadvantage for Indiana playing in state. And then advantage for Penn State and Ohio State playing warmer weather teams in their stadium. So another little sort of feather in the cap of Big Ten teams going into this. Some advantages. Doesn't mean you're going to win, but there's some advantages there. So more teams advancing would be really good for the conference. Yep. All right, let's get some regular bowls. Just the regular old bowls. Next we have
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
This is Thursday, December 26th. Rutgers playing Kansas State Wildcats. Rawr! At the Rate Bowl. Was this previously the Guaranteed Rate Bowl?
I think it was, yeah.
In Phoenix, Arizona, 2:30 on ESPN. Kansas State an early 6.5-point favorite.
Next up,
USC Trojans.
Back to Vegas for USC on Friday, December 27th.
Oh, my God.
USC taking on the Texas A&M Aggies. Just working in a field over here. This is a 7:30 p.m. ESPN game. USC's 6-6, as was prophesied. It's taking place in Allegiant Stadium. It's the SRS Distribution Las Vegas Bowl, just so you know the proper name. A&M's an early 3-point favorite. I would be hitting that one really hard.
Yeah, I mean, USC could have gone to the Sun Bowl, which I was not excited to travel to San Antonio on New Year's Eve, but going to Vegas after Christmas, freaking perfect. So it's all coming up, Millhouse, baby. All right. next up, we got
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
Boston College Eagles. That's not an eagle, but I don't know what an eagle
is. Definitely doesn't sound like an eagle.
9 a.m. on ABC on Saturday, December 28th, Boston College versus Nebraska. Nebraska's an early 2.5-point favorite here in the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how Nebraska can close out the year without their defensive coordinator, Tony White.
Yeah. All right. Next, we've got
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Oh, oh, oh!
This is Monday, December 30th, Iowa against the Missouri Tigers. Wow. I don't know. It's not really a tiger either. This is 11:30 a.m. on ESPN. The Transperfect Music City Bowl. Missouri is a 3-point favorite. This is taking place in the Music City, Nashville, Tennessee at Nissan Stadium.
Oh, nice. Okay. Then we got a bunch of New Year's Eve games. This is the one, this is sort of like the used to be good game. We've got
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch.
How in the hell did Michigan sneak into this game?
I don't know.
Anyway, number 11, Alabama Crimson Tide.
Is that a tide?
I guess so.
Sounds more like a green tide. Make it sound like Crimson Tide.
Oh, I was trying for blood. Is there not blood in my voice?
I'm just kidding.
9 a.m. on ESPN on New Year's Eve, number 11, Alabama against Michigan in the ReliaQuest Bowl. In Tampa, Florida, at Raymond James Stadium, Alabama is an early 10-point favorite.
Yeah. El Gordo says, POC in Vegas. You want to come to Vegas, David?
I can't that weekend, sadly.
Jeez. Well, you have kids around Christmas? Like it's a big deal or something?
So weird.
All right. Well, this was the game that I'm glad I'm not personally going to, but it's going to be good for you guys. All the Husky fans out there, we've got
Washington Huskies.
And they're taking on the Louisville Cardinals. Well, I guess we're going to select a new pope today.
I think it's a different kind of cardinal.
I was just going to do that one, though. 11 a.m. on New Year's Eve on CBS, Louisville and Washington in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl in El Paso, Texas. Louisville is an early 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah. My ex-girlfriend from college, who I'm still friends with, from El Paso, I just really didn't want to go to El Paso for New Year's Eve. Like, I just
was her name. Was her name Felina?
It was not. Rachel. But
that was a Marty Robbins deep cut for the truthers out there.
I don't know what that is, but
don't worry about it.
But as far as bowl name goes, bowl names go. I mean, the Sun Bowl's cool, just it's a classic name. But the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, like that's pretty bad. I like that one. I like the name of the bowl.
I agree.
I think they treat people pretty well too. Okay, we got number 20,
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
And they're taking on the number 15 South Carolina Gamecocks. Cock-a-doodle-doo!
This is a good one. Like
my sound effect. Yeah.
Oh, that was very good too.
Yeah. 12 p.m. on ABC. Number 15 South Carolina. Number 20 Illinois. Yeah. This is just going to be a very good game. South Carolina is in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl in Orlando, Florida, at Camping World Stadium, a 9.5-point favorite.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's a lot of points there. But South Carolina, people were arguing, should have got in. The problem is that they were fighting with Alabama and Ole Miss. They lost to both of those teams. Those were kind of like the three next SEC teams that could have got in, where Illinois is like the fifth. They're like the fifth Beatle. Like they were the fifth team. They're just sort of on the outside looking in. But they could have talked about them more, 9-3, like you were talking about these other teams. So I think a little disrespect coming Illinois' way. So it's cool to see like – one of the just miss Big Ten teams getting to play one of the just miss SEC teams. So I like this bowl.
Yep. Okay.
David doesn't care about that stuff, but I do. Nope. Like it's all right. We also have number one,
Oregon Ducks.
Competing in the Rose Bowl versus TBD.
TBD from?
Sound effect.
So they're waiting on the winner of the Tennessee Ohio State game. But yeah, and then this is so weird. After that, you've got where's their thing?
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
They're taking on Virginia Tech, which is a Hokie.
It's like a kind of turkey kind of thing.
Is it?
I believe. Are you Googling it?
Yeah. No, the official. No, it's just whatever. Gah! Who gives a shit? Yeah, this is taking place in the Duke's Mayo Bowl on Friday, January 3rd, or what we like to call the Anti-Climax Bowl, 4:30 p.m. on ESPN in Charlotte, North Carolina at Bank of America Stadium. Minnesota is a 6.5-point favorite over the Virginia Tech Hokies.
Nice. So let's see. The answer leads all the way back to 1896 when Virginia Agriculture and Mechanical College changed its name to Virginia Polytech Institute. It a new cheer from the student body, blah, blah, blah. First prize for his, quote, Hokie yell, the old Hokie cheer below, is still used today. Blah, blah, blah. Hokie bird, which evolved from a turkey. Virginia Tech teams were once called the Gobblers. So, I don't know. It definitely involves a turkey somehow, but whatever. But that game's after all these playoff games and stuff, which is really weird. But 12 freaking teams, David, in the postseason with more games, mm-hmm. with more potential games. Like, we're going to have 12 more picks. Plus, you know, if teams advance, more picks than that. You could catch up.
Yeah, I think so.
How many games are you behind? Okay.
Four.
Four games behind. Yeah, you could catch up.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I think questions, right?
Yeah, we got a DM that I wanted to put in there. Hello, boys. It's rivalry week. This was from before. Oops. Oh, this maybe we shouldn't. I'll just read it. As the Trojans and Bruins prepare to fight over the Paul Bunyan Trophy this weekend, can you give me a new rivalry name and trophy for both of your schools in the Big Ten? Fight on, beat the Bruins. Did we do that one already?
I think we did.
I think. Sorry about that. I just had it written down, but my apologies. Thank
you. Appreciate you. This is from Frank in Sacramento. SEC gets only three. Maybe it's time the SEC starts playing 9 conference games and stops lining up cupcakes in week 11. All right. I don't think that had anything to do with it, but yeah, sure.
Football equipment logistics. So logistics question, David's favorite, I know. Sorry in advance. I believe football teams have semi-trailers full of equipment they need to bring with them on game day. But they travel across country. How do they ship that equipment? Road, air, ship through the Panama Canal? I'll hang up and listen from Kevin.
They literally drive a trailer truck and they leave several days before the team and get them across the country. When UCLA went to Penn State, I believe the truck left Wednesday morning as I was leaving practice.
Yeah, the trucks go. And I think some do use the Panama Canal.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would make sense.
Hey, it's Crispy Bruin. Took the feedback regarding my audio clips from last week. Wanted to warn you beforehand, my email has a couple of clips regarding Denny Killingham if you'd like to use them.
So I love that he sent a text message warning us to like check his email.
Thinking that we would actually see that.
Yeah, we did not. But I did get here a little bit early. But let me, apologize.
Oh, okay. So you downloaded the ones that are me saying a bad thing.
Last week, he sent some clips. I downloaded one of them. So this is preseason, so you can bag on me. I think they're like there. 9-3.
No, they're like 6-6, 7-5. I think they make like the LA Bowl.
I'm picking like them to go like 9-3, and so Dave is going to.
No, this is a solid LA Bowl team. I think so, you know,
this is the overly optimistic Dave.
Not kidding, and we'll get to it a little bit when we talk about USC, but might be the least talented USC roster I can remember. Like, it's not a very talented roster.
Yeah. So there you go. Okay. Okay. And then
the general rule of thumb again is if you have to start a Wyoming defensive tackle who didn't start regularly at Wyoming, you don't have a very talented roster.
Fair enough.
Eat it. Eat it. All right. Do you want me to read this email before you
go ahead.
Denny Killingham's? All right. This is from Crispy Bruin. Denny Killingham cold take. Dear Diane Wabraham and Ravid Oods, after Ryan, for some reason, refused to load my audio clips while live recording and producing his simulcast, I pinged the text line in hopes he'd pre-download my clips for use. If he hasn't, Dave, please take another victory lap regarding 6-6 USC.
Took care of that for you.
Yeah, the Tempe Normal School Normals have won the Big 12 in the first year with their new conference, and yes, their mascot at one point was the Normal. As a free thinker and libertine, Dave has promptly taken the Mavericks' path of jumping on the ASU bandwagon, claiming the title of Denny Killingham's number one supporter on Twitter and in the podcasting realm. However, my phone recently fell into a fish tank at PetSmart, and the sickly betta fish within selected the podcast episode from August 20th, 2023, where Dave asserted Denny would, quote, not work out, and that ASU would, quote, be returned to the wishing well in 3 to 4 seasons. He also excoriated beloved American pop rock band Train as shitty love pop that has not done anything of value, and disparaged Killingham's genteel appreciation for the group. In honor of Killingham's accomplishment of winning the Big 12 and making the playoff in only his second year, I have attached an appropriate drop to celebrate the killer Sigdenny going forward. I hope this will serve as a reminder that Denny is a good coach, and that good coaches can, like the band Train, keep it mediocre. Crispy Bruin.
All right, so he has two drops. I haven't listened to him yet. Let's try this first one.
He knows. He gets it.
Denny Killingham favorite band is Train.
Okay, and then he has this other one.
Well, that's an optimistic mindset. As I said earlier, Denny Killingham not going to work out. Favorite band is Train. I think, you know, ASU will be returning to the wishing well in 3 or 4 seasons.
There he's a, there you go.
It was a joke. It was a joke about Train. I've always been a big Killingham fan. It was a joke, Crispy Bruin.
That was pretty good. Hold on, we got.
Not just gonna play because it's fun. This team fights, and they fight, and they fight. If you don't expect to win every game, you got a problem. I don't care if I'm playing Michael Jordan in basketball. I'm not playing him to lose.
Can you believe that David had no faith that he would, that Kenny Dillingham, Denny Killingham would take ASU to the college football playoff? How do you have no faith? God, what are your worst takes? Not, yeah, I think even worse than Jaden Daniels not going to even start at LSU and he won the Heisman.
I thought that was a great take. I hold
that is the greatest take of all time. He's not going to start at LSU. He won the Heisman. That's like the best freaking take of all time. Like, that is so
I have a gift. If I say something a certain way and I want it to happen, it will never happen.
You wish, though, that the USC 6-6 thing, especially
I did bring that into existence.
Because if you said, okay, USC beats LSU, and you're like, okay, they're not going 6-6. So that was even more glorious that they get this LSU win and still go 6-6. So you did. You manifested that. But these other ones, like the whole Jaden Daniels thing. That was so freaking cool. All right. POC Bowlbound. Ryan and David, you were bestowed the ability to introduce a new bowl game. What is your bowl eligibility? Who is your sponsor? What trophy will they play for? What two teams are playing in the first annual insert name bowl?
What is our bowl eligibility?
So I guess it's giving us the option that maybe we could do like 5 and 7 is the eligibility. So like we don't want the teams that have a winning record. We want somebody else. Or we pick something like 4 and 8 or, you know, some theme to it. We don't have to say.
All right, I've got it.
Okay.
The two worst teams in FBS football by, let's call it the SP Plus. Who is the sponsor? I think Kohler, the toilet manufacturer.
Okay.
They will play for a bronze toilet. And so let's go to the most recent SP Plus final 2024. Get it? No, that's not it. SP Plus week 14. Sure. Okay. Hang on. You just hold tight.
All right.
You're doing great.
I have a different answer.
Kent State versus Kennesaw State.
Okay.
No? You don't want to see that?
That's cool. All right. I'm going to go a different way.
Okay.
I'm going to say the eligibility, you have to be no more than 2 wins.
Okay.
So I'm picking bottom 2, but I want to pair the last place SEC team with the last place Big Ten team. So the two power conferences. So this year that would be Mississippi State
and Purdue.
And name maybe like the Buc-ee's Bowl or something. What's like a common like Midwest Southern like staple?
Yeah, the Buc-ee's works.
The Buc-ee's or the Waffle House Bowl or something. Or we could do or maybe it changes each year. So like if the SEC team loses, it becomes the Waffle House Bowl. And if the Big Ten team loses, what are those little slider burgers that they get in like Chicago? What are the White Castle? It's the White Castle Bowl.
Okay. So
the loser determines which it's going to be, the Southern thing or the or White Castle thing. That'll be my bowl.
All right, I like that.
You like it? I just came up with that. Okay,
that was good. All right, I think that was the last one.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that was we got another bump there. Okay, cool. All right. We wanted to get out here at 10:30. I think we,
it's 10:28.
Yeah. I think we crushed this. Oh, yeah. What's the trophy? They want to know what the trophy is. Ooh. Do you know what your trophy would be?
Yeah. It's a bronze toilet.
Bronze toilet.
Like bronzed. Yeah.
What would be a good one for SEC and what, like you have to have, I think corn has to be involved somehow. Maybe a tornado? I'm not sure.
Well, the Big Ten has competed against the SEC before. It was known as the American Civil War.
So you want like a musket to be the...
yeah, maybe a rifled musket.
The keep your powder dry bowl or something? Or I don't know.
No, or it should be like the... like. You know, what everyone considers like the worst general in that war, like a bronze bust of him. Like, I don't know, like a George B. McClellan you can win. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. We can flesh this out a little bit.
Yeah. I like that. But I do like sort of pairing the last place teams. I think there does need like as a, like an adaptable schedule where you play a bunch of games and then towards the end you start playing like strategic, not strategic, but like almost seeded games, either cross conference or something, or start the next season with like the top SEC teams playing the top Big Ten teams all the way down, something like that. They don't have the same number of teams in the conference, at least, but to see that would be cool. But I want to see the bottom place, the bottom finishing teams play each other in some kind of consolation bowl. That'd be great.
I know you like watching bottom finishing teams.
I would watch it. It's college football, yeah. Man. We go months without this stuff. So I'll take whatever. Yeah, and you got to play it in like June. So then we get a college football game in like June.
Yeah.
You like that? Okay. Well, that's going to wrap things up. Whew. I'm back from vacation, David.
You are.
I need a vacation.
I do.
No, I said I do. You don't need one. I just want to.
I thought you said I. Wow.
You can't. No, you should get one. I've tried to get you to do stuff, you know, and you're like,
Yeah.
I'm going to like give you some sashimi or treat you to some.
That's right, girl.
And you won't make fun of my pictures with.
I would never make fun of your pictures. Did I do that earlier on the show? That was rude.
See that? It's going to be a really tasty sashimi. So good.
Things big.
Make
big
some fish. Cut it up. Make a little spicy tuna. I could do some rolls, or you buy those little seaweed snacks from like Trader Joe's. You can put it on there with like some jalapeno and a dollop of a spicy mayo. Man, it's gonna be good.
How much would I have to pay you to just take a bite out of the side of the fish next time you fish one out of the water? Just grab it and just bite into it,
into the skin of the fish.
Yeah, just take a big old bite out of it.
I was with this crazy dude and he bit the tail of this big yellow fin he caught, and he bit the tail of a swordfish. He has this really thin, like small, he gets sponsored by fishing stuff. So he was trying to catch a big marlin on a really small and small tackle and got the thing in, and you released the marlin, but we got it on the boat. He was telling deckhands and they were like, we just want to cut it, you know, release him. He's like, no, he had to get on the boat. Was carrying it like this with his fishing pole in his mouth to show that he caught this big fish with this small fishing pole, bites the tail. I don't know what he was doing. He goes like, take off my hat and glasses. And then to release the fish back, He has the fish in his arm. This big freaking marlin. I mean, it was like, I don't know, 6 feet long. It was over 100 pounds. Jumps into the water with the marlin to like release the fish. He was insane. So he bit the fish and he was like plah, plah, afterwards. So I don't think you want to bite the outside. You could do.
Wait, you're telling me this guy bit a fish that he then released back into the water?
The tail of it was like a 120 pound marlin. It was like, yes.
If I bit your foot, would it feel good?
I mean, I don't know. It was like, it's the thing's tail. It's crazy. Those marlins are insane. They're like, they're super apex predators, but they love mackerel. So you put mackerel on a line, get out there, they munch that shit up. I could pull it up on my phone. It's crazy. Like this. I'll send you the picture. But he's nuts. It was awesome dude to fish with, but absolutely nuts. I've never seen a guy carry a marlin and jump overboard with it to let it to
and release bite it. Its tail.
And he bit its tail. Yeah. I don't know what to tell, but it was good. Some of the fishermen do that. Like if you catch a yellowtail or something for the first time, you don't bite it, but you're supposed to eat the heart. So I did that once with it was like a golf ball size thing. Chug a beer. That's like a fisherman's.
You
deal.
Folks are getting up to some weird
a rite
shit
of passage
in the water. Yeah,
to eat like the heart of the fish, but I don't know.
All right, Khal Drogo.
Well, now we went over.
Yep.
Okay, well, for David Woods, do you want to pose, or what are we going to do? No, you don't care. Okay, Abraham, I hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye!